Welcome to the Elementary Librarian Podcast, where we discuss simple tips and tricks to help you take your school library to the next level. And now your host, Jocelyn Sam.
Welcome, listeners. Today, I'm very excited to have a special guest, Debbie Alvarez of thestylinglibrarian.com. And Debbie is here to talk to us about her experiences about being a teacher librarian in Hong Kong. And so, Debbie, welcome to my show.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I found Debbie actually through Twitter. And I started looking at her website, her blog, thestylinglibrarian.com, and I started reading about some of her experiences about moving over to Hong Kong and about working in Hong Kong. And I'm sort of a little bit obsessed with other cultures around the world. I have always just been curious about the way that other people live in different places and just things that they do and things of that nature. So I'm actually, it's kind of strange, I'm friends with people from a lot of different countries. Two of my best friends are from Brazil and Japan. So I always ask them lots of questions. And so I thought, you know, it would be so cool to have Debbie on the show and just kind of pick her brain about what it's like to be a librarian in Hong Kong. And so that's sort of the plan for today. And so as we get started here, Debbie, will you just tell us a little bit about yourself, where you are, why you became a librarian, how long you've been a librarian, anything you'd like to share with the listeners?
Okay. So my name is Debbie Alvarez. I am a teacher librarian at Bradbury School, which is here in Hong Kong. It's on the main island. And there are a couple of islands that are mostly connected by bridges and such. But I'm on the island line, as you might say. And Bradbury School is up on a mountain, and it has a most beautiful view of the bay and a whole bunch of different things. So I'm here in Hong Kong. I've been here for about a year and a few months now, and I'll jump back in time. I became a teacher librarian because I do have a huge passion for children's literature. I love teaching. I love technology, and it's fun to research still. I continue being a teacher librarian because of the literacy and technology inspiration. I'm never bored. I love helping grow students and their passion for literature, and I have quite a fun time collaborating with colleagues. I've been a librarian for over 14 years, and before that I was a special ed teacher as well.
Okay. All right. And why, let's see, well, you talked about why you became a librarian because you said that you love children's literature, and I do also. And okay, so how long have you been in education? Where were you at before you moved over to Hong Kong?
Oh, I've been a teacher for 16 years, and I started as a special education teacher, and then I quickly went back for my master's degree because I could just tell what my passion was, which was being a librarian. And I was over in Oregon for most of my teaching career, and I was at one school for 12 years as a teacher librarian there, and I absolutely loved that school. It was hard to leave. About 3 years ago, I could tell there was a change coming in my district with some possible cuts, and I thought that I should be my own advocate and reach out internationally to teach. And my husband, additionally, was very interested in living overseas and experiencing life there. And as well as I really wanted to give my son the opportunity to live in a different location. So one of the things I was looking for was finding a connection through the Primary Years Program, which is an international baccalaureate program that my former school had adopted. And I found this school, Bradbury School in Hong Kong, advertising, and it is part of a school foundation that completely embraces the International Baccalaureate Program and Primary Years Program. So I thought it was a very good connection because I'd actually have some common language with new colleagues. So it was one of those good fits.
Right, right. Yeah. That is that's awesome. So the school that you were at, it was somewhat connected to this other school, right?
with the Ridgewood, where I was at before moving to Hong Kong. It was a regular public school, and the district was just starting to integrate in this teaching philosophy, teaching program. And so it was connected just through the same approach to education.
Okay, okay. And so the school that you're at now, it is an English-speaking school, correct?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. And I have been reading some on your blog, but just for the benefit of other people who haven't, you know, I want to ask these questions. So tell us a little bit about your library responsibilities, like the kind of things that you teach during the day, maybe the types of work that you do in your library. How is it the same as it was when you were a teacher librarian in Oregon, and how is it different?
Well, there's a lot of similarities in some ways, and then there's a huge amount of differences. I'll start with teaching stuff. So I still teach the love of literature. I introduce and integrate technology in with my lessons. I write web pages and resource lists for teachers that are starting new research and inquiry units. And I am a co-teacher most of the time. When the teachers come into the library, they stick around for the class so that we can co-teach if there's a research project or if there is specific things that we've agreed to. We co-plan as a team beforehand, and I find ways to integrate the library curriculum and research in with their units. So, for example, I've taught on plagiarism. I've taught on internet safety, just the regular typical basics. I've additionally been part of the classroom for weeks on end, being a co-teacher for a fifth grade or year six classroom. And so there's those kind of, I find it very similar, but at the same time, there's a little more collaboration here at my new school. Big difference is in the past, I had to maintain technology, and now I don't. I have a helper who cleans the library every day and tidies up shelves. That's just beautiful. I have, honestly, more training opportunities here in Hong Kong, which was a shock to me. There's a lot of different words that I had to get used to. Like when I do inventory, I threw off my assistant many times last year because I said inventory instead of stock take. I said book cart instead of trolley. I had to get accustomed to a new library catalog, and that took a steep learning curve for me for that one. There's different leveled readers and curriculum adoptions that they were just fascinating to get accustomed to. Other differences, I was at, I moved to a very large school from, one where I was at for years on end. It was right around 400 fluctuating, and now I'm at 700 students, and there's one main principal and three vice principals as well, so there's a little more administration to work with, which I actually love. Let's see. The same things. I love the connections. I still have many connections to the teachers, and I love the collaboration, which is similar. Teaching similar, like I mentioned. I really have been lucky because I have a really supportive administration here, as I did in Oregon, and they handle me spinning off on various projects, saying, okay, I want to revamp things and create a book exchange right now, or I need to redo this whole professional collection because it needs to be weeded now. They handle me doing little pet projects often. I'm still able to write websites for student resource research. And then the PYP program, of course, is the same. And there's additionally a really good librarian connection here in Hong Kong where I get together with various colleagues from around Hong Kong, and one actually travels by ferry and train from China once a month. We all get together, and I love that. Aless program. And then, of course, I've made really good friends through Twitter even before I moved here to Hong Kong. And a few close teacher-librarian friends are additionally my Twitter friends. So that was beautiful. So that was a nice connection from moving to Portland to here.
Yeah, that is really cool. It sounds like that your administration there in Hong Kong, that they are very interested in what's happening in the library, and they view you as a partner with other faculty. Is that right?
Absolutely. I feel quite a support and acceptance of my professionalism. And at times they're astounded by what I put out, but at the same time they're starting to grow accustomed to all the different programs that I run and don't mind the extra things like celebrating book week and such.
Right. Yeah, I feel like a lot of times in my state and others as well, that, you know, sometimes we're just asked to do more and more and more and more, and that just is just part of what we do, and, you know, it's a very thankless job. And so I'm glad that they recognize that what you're doing is beneficial for the students.
Yes, I'm really grateful for that. And my principal in Oregon was just thoroughly appreciative and understood when I had to cut back on things. But at the same time, I've been really lucky with administration understanding what I do and helping me advocate and keep up with things. And it's been a lovely supportive system, and I know how spoiled I am with that.
Yeah, definitely. So going back to moving, what would you say is the biggest adjustment that you had to make when you moved over to Hong Kong?
Well, I grew up in Alaska, and then I moved to Oregon, and I never dealt with humidity too much. And humidity just about threw me for a loop when we first moved here in July last year. And 3 days into our adventure living here in Hong Kong, there was this huge typhoon that just about turned me on my heels and made me want to run back home because it was a storm system I'd never dealt with before. Now it's just commonplace. But that was a huge adjustment, was just getting used to the weather. Being at a distance from my family was new to me, so that was difficult. Most of our routines were lost. Favorite restaurants we go to every week or every month, and favorite locations. The public library system was very different. So there were things that were quite the adjustment that way. And then there were the language barriers that really were quite the challenge at first. Riding in a taxi could always be a challenge unless I had my Google Translator on. My husband and I both agreed that living in a little apartment has been the biggest adjustment from being in our beautiful big house that we're renting out right now to living in a tiny little apartment that's 900 square feet. It's a bit of an adjustment. My son likes it, but sometimes we feel quite cramped. And I guess I'd say food. We've been exposed to so many new foods here in Hong Kong, but I really do miss places like Trader Joe's and grocery shopping at Costco even. Sometimes we miss that a lot.
Yeah, that's one thing that I am very curious about is grocery stores and other places. Like I said, my friend that lives in Brazil, she goes back quite often. She lives here, but she goes back to visit family. And I ask her to send me pictures of things in the grocery store.
Yeah.
Because it's so fascinating to me. I don't know.
Yeah, my sister was quite amused by me walking. It was my first time walking through an area called Wan Chai, their marketplace. I was walking down the street where there were live fish for sale and a whole variety of meats. And then I came across my first oxtail just hanging down from the side of the vendor's area. And on my video that I sent to her, I went, oh, because it just threw me for such a loop to see an ox's tail with the hair attached to the bottom hanging right there. And it's quite a delicacy here, but there's always fruit that I think is fascinating, so we'll buy it one and take it home. There's a certain fruit called a pomelo that's almost as big as my son's head, and you just never know what you'll encounter here because it's such a convergence of so many different beautiful cultures that going down one street, I could just experience the world. It's pretty exciting here in that way.
Yeah, I looked at a lot of your pictures and I noticed that a lot of the words are written in English. Are you guys in like a predominantly English speaking area where you live? Or I know that English is like the second official language there. I guess a lot of people speak it.
Yes, many people speak English in certain areas of Hong Kong. There's no problem, no language barrier. When you go to other areas, there's no English whatsoever. In New Territories, we went on a tour and realized quickly that the whole bus tour was going to be in Cantonese, and it was quite amusing because the gentleman who guided the tour said a whole bunch of stuff in Cantonese for about 45 minutes, and then he'd look at us and say, "Now we go see cows." And so that was all he would translate for us, and we were grateful for just that much for the tour. But most of the time, there is English spoken, and it is definitely English and Chinese translations throughout Hong Kong, especially since Hong Kong used to be, if you go back through the history of Hong Kong, it's only been in, I'm not sure what year now. Bad expat. I think 1996 was
1997, I think.
Look at me. Almost.
Yeah, I did a little research, librarian.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was taken back and given back to the Chinese in 1997. And so there are many, many expats that still live here, but it's a fine balance between the two.
Right. Did you guys speak any of the native language before you came, or are you currently learning?
We spoke none.
Okay.
And I am currently learning a little bit here and there, and my son is learning Mandarin, which is the mainland Chinese
right.
language, and my husband's studying Mandarin as well, and I'm trying to learn a little bit of Cantonese so that I can get along a little better here, and I have a book and a crash course kind of audio file to listen to once in a while. And I honestly, that was something that I wanted to work on this summer, but it's hard to prioritize when I have so many other things that are distracting me as well, to be honest.
I understand that. What about your students in the school? Are they fluent in English when they come in, or are they learning as they go?
As they get accepted to Bradbury, they have to go through an interview process, and they do need to speak a good amount of English to be accepted. So there's a few littlies, like little kindergartners, year ones, that look at me with very wide eyes at first because they don't speak as much English. But overall, all my students are fluent in English.
Right. Okay. What are some of the favorite books? Is it pretty much the same kind of things that we read over here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of English authors that are super popular, and the typical Percy Jackson and Baby Mouse and whatever have you. They're typical. And then there's the English and Australian authors as well that are very well embraced here. Enid Blyton, Jacqueline Woodson, and Michael Morpogo. There's a whole bunch of authors that I've been exposed to over the past year that I'm just feeling really lucky to experience, and I try to just pick up a couple of new books that I'm not aware of yet from the shelf and read a couple of new authors every once in a while that I feel, oh, we have six books of the same author, and I haven't read his books yet. Ah, I should read that next. So there's a lot of very typical, very popular books, The Diary of a Wimpy Kid and such, but then there's a whole other area of books that I feel my students are a little more internationally minded about, since they're just so exposed to so many different cultures here. And we have a good international language collection as well. So that's fun.
Yeah, I know that you do a lot of book reviews on your blog. I've read a couple of those. Do you talk about books that, you know, may not be as well known to Americans?
Oh, yes. Often okay. I'm sharing books, and I think about 4 weeks ago, I had a big Australian shipment come in. And I had been dying to see these books because I'd read them. A few of them were reviewed on the Book Chook, which is one of my favorite blogs to follow. I think I follow the Book Chook for about 5 years, and she's based in Australia. So I've always been tortured before hearing about these fantastic Australian books and not getting access to them, and now I finally have access. And so I reviewed a variety of really special picture books that were written by Australian authors. And there's additionally book awards that I've focused in on that are from the UK. And then I feel like it's my responsibility to be aware of international books now, because that's where my students are from. And if I'm ordering a book that's from America, I'll check first if it's been published in the UK, because I'd prefer to have spellings that my students recognize a little more. And it definitely is not American spellings taught at my school, if that makes sense.
I saw some of the words.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was sort of some things that I had, some questions. My next question is, aside from like family and friends, what do you miss the most from the United States? You know, maybe it's a food or a place or something like that, or something totally frivolous. What do you miss the most about the United States?
Well, we moved here with my dog, and she's 13 now. And one of the biggest things that my husband and I both miss are the parks. In Oregon, we're allowed to bring our dog to gorgeous green, luscious parks, and there's parks with huge trees in them, and you can run around in the parks and have a whole bunch of fun gallivanting. Here in Hong Kong, you do not run, you walk. There are posts that always say in almost every park I've been to, no dogs allowed. And they have people patrolling, not police that will yell at you, but definitely people that will tell you slow down and no dogs if you try to bring a running child in or bring your dog to the park. So we really miss the Oregon parks a lot. And air quality is something else that we miss sometimes. It's pretty hideous at times here. And for me personally, I miss cherry cider from Trader Joe's. It's been my biggest withdrawal, and it was the first thing that my parents had for me when I came to visit over spring break last year. And then I got rid of most of my clothing, and sometimes I go through a bit of withdrawal thinking about the things that I've totally donated and gotten rid of. And I used to have about 5,000 to 7,000 books in my old home in the library, and I donated most of them. I think I have 10 little file boxes of books that I was able to keep in storage. So those are little things that I miss the most. Hong Kong is a really great place to live here. As an expat, I absolutely love the travel experience, and like you mentioned before, with the language, I didn't have to worry about a language barrier when it came to going to a bank, so it was a very lucky place to move in that way. And I've found in the past year many things that I was missing the most. I actually, a quarter of them I'm able to find here in Hong Kong, so it was quite a relief. I even found a semblance to a Costco about 2 weeks ago with my husband, and we were really excited to go somewhere where there were American brands. We didn't buy much, but it was nice to know where to find things.
Okay, so you're currently on a 2-year contract with your school. How far into the contract are you right now?
A year and a few months.
Okay. So,
yeah, this is the second year in.
Okay, and so if in the future you do decide to come back to the United States, what would be something that you might miss about Hong Kong?
The travel opportunities. It's been incredible to be able to just hop on a plane and quickly go to Thailand or Vietnam. We have hopes to go to Australia and to Singapore, and it's just been quite an exciting experience just to travel into China a variety of times now. So I know my husband and I, that's our biggest thing that we've missed is the travel opportunities. And then on a personal, real personal level, we have a full-time helper here who's a godsend. And she's like part of the family, able to help with whatever we ask for. We have no dishwasher or dryer here. At first I was surviving all on my own, and I'm sure I could still do it, but we would miss having her part of family and having her support.
Yeah, I would say so. Speaking of your family, I didn't ask you this earlier, but how is your son liking the experience?
The first year he had a fluctuating time. a little sensitive soul. He made a few friends, but this year he's loving it a lot more, and he anticipates things a little more now. He still misses America. He still misses his friends and really misses family and home. Skyping helps with that a little bit, but still. But overall, I think he's just really stepped up and really enjoyed the opportunities here. Being able to just take a train and go to a water park or hop on a bus and go to different entertainment areas around Hong Kong, he's finding it a little more appealing here, to say the least.
So, yeah,
and he
good.
Thinks a little bit more longer term too. So I think that it's been a good transition, even though I was quite concerned at first.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, as an adult, I think it's fascinating. But as a child, you know, I can understand how it might be a little bit difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And how's your husband getting along? Is he enjoying it?
Yeah. He grew up living overseas with his family, so it was something where it was more natural for him. Me, I'd visited on a whirlwind trip to Europe and visited Canada before, but I'd never lived overseas. So it was a steep learning curve for me, and a bit more culture shock. He's always stepped up to the plate and said, okay, here we go. And so he plans all our trips, and he just goes and joins up with groups and makes new friends easily. So he's loved it here. And last year he was working on his actuary exams and such. And this year he's changed his passion a little and looked into teaching in a foreign language more and tutoring. And he's a teacher assistant at another school close by. So I like that he's able to keep busy and at the same time easily make new friends too. So we've all pretty much adjusted.
Yeah, that's great. I'm kind of the same as you were. You know, I've been to Europe once on a quick business trip in my previous life, and I've been to Canada, I've been to Mexico, you know, but I've not really been to any foreign country for any extended period of time. So yeah, so that's what, I don't know. I just find it just so fascinating, just so interesting to talk to people from different areas or that live in different areas. So you talked a little bit about how you stay in touch with people. How do you stay in touch with your friends, family, librarians that you knew back in Oregon?
I was in a really close, tight network, and I used to run a statewide battle program. So I already was connected with librarians throughout the state again by email. And we've always kept in touch, and Facebook, we've kept up pretty well with one another because we're such good friends that way. Twitter, I've kept up with some of my close librarian and teacher friends through Twitter as well. With my family, my closest family, it's always been about Skype. Being able to see each other face to face and have conversations is the way we've kept ourselves balanced. And email the other way. We email on a pretty much frequent daily basis, especially my parents. And then, honestly, my blog, I started the blog in January, and I moved here in July. So the blog has been the way that a lot of my former colleagues at my old school keep up with me, by email and such, too. But really, a lot of my friends, they've told me, whenever I need a new book idea, I go to your blog, Debbie. Oh, I feel like I'm still connected with you, Debbie, because I can live vicariously through your posts about Hong Kong. And so they still feel like they're able to keep up with me because I post so frequently.
Yeah, it's great. I've been reading for the past few weeks, and I've gone back to some of your previous posts, too, just to see what was going on. And it is really cool, you know, because you can look at your pictures of your videos and just see what all you're doing and the kind of adventures that you guys are having. And it is a very, very much vicarious living, I'd say.
Yeah. And then Twitter has been one of my favorite things that I've used to keep up with colleagues and make new friends and expand my world community-wise through educators and teacher librarians. And I just adore using Twitter. And my absolute favorite, honestly, favorite connection through Twitter was making friends with Lenore Look a year ago, who wrote the Alvin Ho series. And making friends with her, thanks to Amy Dykeman noticing that I, another wonderful author who noticed that I have Lenore's book as my face, holding up a book to it at the top of my blog. Lenore and I made friends and were able to chat through Twitter and then meet in person and have an author visit and then meet in person again this summer and learn Kung Fu together and live in China for a while with her family when she was studying at the Shaolin Temple. It's all because of Twitter. It was a beautiful connection that I've just really appreciated.
Yeah, Twitter is my last podcast, actually. I talked about how school librarians and other people use Twitter, and it's just such an awesome tool. There are so many people out there who are using it, and you just never know who you're going to run into.
Exactly. Yeah, I enjoyed your last podcast. That was really interesting to hear another perspective on using Twitter.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. If, you know, if somebody's out there and they're thinking, wow, this sounds really cool, this sounds like something I might like to do, would you recommend it to other people?
Living as an expat or teaching abroad?
Yes. Uh-huh,
oh,
teaching
abroad. Yeah. And a number of people through the past year and a half have actually asked me for advice. I have received so many emails, and a couple of people that didn't know me at first have taken jobs abroad, overseas in different places, and I've enjoyed keeping up with them after I've answered all their questions and given advice. I've written a few posts about my perspective on teaching abroad after answering three different people and finding that my answers were similar. I thought, oh, this could be a blog post, so I made one. but I do recommend it. It just depends on the personality and the family and the commitment and the support of the school and financial aspect. I pay over $3,000 a month U.S. dollars to live in this tiny apartment.
Wow.
and because of compensation and through my school salary, I'm able to survive it. But we were on a single income, so it was quite a thoughtful endeavor to make sure that we'd be able to balance the budget and, you know, provide our son with the sports interests that he wanted to have and ourselves with the social and eating out aspects and survival of it all. It's quite a extensive experience sometimes. And then other times I know friends that are housed, and so their housing and everything is covered when they go teach abroad. So it just, I have given people the advice to just really dig and read the fine print of their contract before they commit to moving overseas.
Right. Well, speaking of that, I didn't ask you this ahead of time, and so it may be hard to think of some offhand, but it just occurred to me that, you know, if you are interested in maybe doing this kind of working abroad experience, are there any resources that you can think of offhand that might be helpful for someone who is considering this? And well, if not, you know, you can email it to me later if you can't think of anything offhand.
Yeah, I can email you. I know in my post that I wrote about teaching overseas, I did list some of the schools and the programs that interview and hire. And I know personally that I did a whole bunch of about Hong Kong before I even took the interview, because I didn't want to waste people's time if I was interviewing. So I'll give you my link to that post where okay. I have some of the websites that I found useful.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah. And there's always someone blogging. There's always someone sharing their ideas for living overseas somewhere. And I have really appreciated, especially even this year, reading expat life in other countries. And I've been following a number of people because I find it fascinating to imagine living over in Africa, teaching going and living in Johannesburg and teaching there, and what aspect of life they are coming from. And it's just fascinating. So I'll try to find a few of my favorite blog posts as well that help me think about living overseas.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, I'd just like to link to things in my show notes so that people who are listening can look and see what kind of information is out there about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, well, that was pretty much the end of my questions. If people have any questions for you about the information we've discussed, how would you like for them to contact you?
They can always contact me through Stylin Librarian on Twitter. It's at STYLIN. LIBRARIAN. There's no G in there because Twitter didn't allow me to have long enough thing to have.
Right, yeah.
And then also on my website, people usually email me through the contact me links there. And that's the stylinelibrarian.com with the G. So,
yeah, and I'll put all those on the show notes. So,
that way. So, those are the best ways to contact me.
Okay, great. Well, I really appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate you asking me. It was quite exciting.
Yeah, and I look forward to it posting, and I hope that you can share it with some of your friends, maybe some of your fellow educators over in Hong Kong, and just a big hello to them from the American listeners, and we appreciate you guys collaborating with us.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. And to my elementary librarian listeners, I, as always, appreciate all of you, and I hope that you have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Elementary Librarian Podcast, brought to you by elementarylibrarian.com.